A podcast of the cinema.
Isn't that weird how it keeps making that noise?
I'm not. Do you hear, not hear I'm it? Not hearing it, but then I'm
every time I turn off, every time the music stops, now it goes pop.
Huh?
I don't know. I'm hearing it.
I'm sure
the speakers are right in my face.
We're That's all right. doomed. You are Dave White, film critic for The Wrap.
We are doomed.
I am Alonso Duraldi, film reviews editor at The Wrap, co-host of Who Shot Ya at Maximum Fun and the new podcast and YouTube show Breakfast All Day. Welcome. It's very early in the morning for me, and I'm on cup of coffee number two, trying to get lucid.
Have you had a little breakfast yet?
I have not.
Why not? I mean, I'm going to make breakfast later.
That and
but you know, I like to have a first breakfast.
No, I'm down for that too. But I didn't even have the motor skills yet to do like a bowl of cereal. I got my coffee. I can hold it in both hands.
But I'll you be, got your talking box ready to go.
It is well oiled for chatting.
Are you feeling the joy of life today? How are you feeling?
I never feel the joy of life first thing in the morning, ever. Not even on Christmas. Like, first thing in the morning is just not my time to shine.
Well, you've been up for a whole hour.
Golly.
So I expect you to sparkle, Neely. Sparkle.
What's that peanut strip where Lucy's trying to analyze Charlie Brown based on whether he's a sunrise or a sunset person, and he finally says, actually, I've always sort of preferred noon.
Noon is when you are at your best.
I think so.
Yeah. You know, I bound right out of bed.
You do.
Like it's a Sealy posturepedic morning.
And I'm endlessly grateful that you do so very quietly.
I do so very quietly. I just have all my thinking happening then.
Mm.
That's when I wake up with all my great ideas.
Like those novelists that get up at 5 a.m. and crank out pages before anybody else in the house is up. I'm like, oh, good for you.
Well, I'm not cranking out pages, but
I'm
awake and I'm feeling more like the most productive and the most like half smart.
Zippity doo dah.
As half smart as I am, that's when I'm at my half smartest.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's a full half.
Yes. So, I mean, I got up this morning at like 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my second cup of tea.
Okay.
But I drink slowly, more slowly than you.
Mm.
You guzzle it down.
I need it.
Yeah. We have a lot of things going on today. This is why we're doing this so early.
Yes, it's a busy day.
You've got a Max Fun
extra episode.
The Maximum Fun Studios, the Maximum Fun Podcast Network that hosts Who Shot Ya.
Yes.
Y'all are doing an extra episode today.
Yes, Max Fun Drive is coming up, our annual fundraising drive where listeners give their monthly support in return for cool extra stuff. This year's Who Shot Ya pin is gorgeous. I'm very excited for people to see it.
I haven't seen it yet.
I can't talk about it yet.
Oh.
I can show you, but off mic. And then also you get tons of extra content. Every show on the Max... Why am I promoting somebody else? Every show on the Max Fun Network records an extra episode that only donors to Max Fun Drive get to hear. And so the Who Shot Ya folks are recording that episode today.
After we record this.
Yes.
And after we record Linoleum Nights.
That is correct.
Which is a podcast that you can get via Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on our Patreon, I'll just do that little ad right now since you're promoting Max Fun. Patreon is this place where we offer you extra things, extra podcasts, merchandise, prizes, the pleasure of knowing us.
Special hangout opportunities.
That's what I mean by that. We all hung out last night on the internet and we watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail
on Netflix.
And we chatted about it the entire time.
Yes.
with texts. Well, typings.
Yeah, we were in a Google Hangout, and we all talked about being part of that group of people at your high school who knew the movie by heart. That seemed to be a recurring theme
it was.
Of the evening.
And you go to patreon.com/linoleumknife, and that will explain everything to you. There's a video you can watch.
Yeah.
There's a lot of explanation. More than I'm going to give you right here.
We've got extra content.
I get tired of hearing myself talk about Patreon.
Our show about TV and the food show that we're not really qualified to do, but do anyway.
That's right.
And neat, tangible items.
Neat.
They're so neat.
Everything's so neat.
I want to bring neat back because I'm sick of... Well, no, because...
Don't.
Well, you know what you know the adjective that I hate that's got to go away?
What?
Clean. Especially in those Panera ads.
What?
Our soup is so clean.
What are you talking about?
Are you not watching these? Did you not see the
news? No, when I see a Panera ad, I start puking and I don't hear what's being said.
Between Panera and Gwyneth Paltrow...
Oh, you're talking about clean eating.
Clean, yes.
Oh, well, that's stupid.
That's a stupid adjective. I'm eating borax. What does that mean, clean? It's nonsense.
My tea is Lysol all-purpose cleaner.
Also, before we get into the movies this week, we want to give a big, big thank you to our listener, Brian.
Oh, yes.
We were having tech issues of late that were just messing everything up because I was still using the original doodad that we got when we started this podcast 8 years ago. If you know anything about computers, which I don't, but we were basically having to go from FireWire to USB to USB-C to communicate from the doohickey to my laptop.
Sounds, noises.
It was not going well. Yeah. So he basically pointed us to a new doohickey that is directly USB-C that's talking to my laptop much more fluently.
It still makes no sense, but it works now.
Exactly. That's all you need to worry yourself about, your pretty little head, is that the things are working now. So thank you, Brian. You're a lifesaver.
Indeed you are. I would like to talk about the new Jean-Luc Godard film.
Yes. I'm very excited about it.
I'm only going to talk about it for a couple minutes here.
Yeah, I'm going to see it this week.
I don't want to get too deep into it.
Okay.
I just want to let y'all know it's here.
It exists.
It's here and it exists.
It opened in New York.
It opened in New York a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago. It might already be gone by now from
Maybe.
New York. It opened in Los Angeles this past weekend.
Yeah.
It's going to be here for exactly 1 week.
At the Arrow.
If anyone else is going to pick it up after that,
who knows?
Who knows?
I wouldn't assume that they are.
No.
So
I want to go see it there again with you. I've seen it once and... it's a lot. What you should know about Mr. Godard is that everything he's done since the late 90s, from like Histoires du Cinéma on, has been kind of a collage.
Yeah.
More or less. Images, sound, voiceover, sometimes actors.
Sometimes.
Sometimes a dog.
That dog. That's so great.
It's his dog.
His dog is a star. If you saw Goodbye to Language, that dog.
This one has no actors.
Oh.
None.
Dogs?
No dogs.
Oh, boo.
It's the purest of collage.
Well, why don't you tell me what the title is?
The Image Book.
There you go.
And it is sort of a kaleidoscope of sounds and images. And when I say sounds, I mean, sometimes the sound will drop out in the middle of people talking and you think, is there something wrong with the movie theater? The publicist, Margot, at the Egyptian where I saw it.
For Cinematheque, yeah.
For Cinematheque. She said, I have to tell you all before the film starts, there are abrupt shifts in sound and volume. In image and what you see on screen, the screen will go black. The sound will get extremely loud all of a sudden without warning. These are things that will happen during this film. So in the middle of, he loves showing clips from Johnny Guitar.
Oh, okay.
He's done it before.
Yeah.
But in the middle of this Johnny Guitar clip that he's done before, like the screen just goes black and the sound just cuts out. and you're thinking, wait, why?
Projectionist?
why is this happening? It's divided into five parts.
Okay.
It is up to you to determine what those parts mean individually and how they fit together.
Okay.
Here's the overall feeling that I was left with after seeing it one time, and I do need to see it again. He's very old now.
Yes.
And I think he's losing hope.
Did he have any before?
I don't know how much he had before, but what he had, it seems to be, it's like my battery is dying and it's getting so dark. Like, oh. I don't know how much longer we have this man with us. He's 88, 89. He's upset. And the world is...
like Drake.
The world, yes. And the world is going to break open and kill all of us, I think. And I believe that's the message of the film.
Okay.
It's February, you guys. The perfect time to see a movie like this.
He just turned 88 in December.
Okay.
So he's got a new movie, and Agnes Varda has a new movie that just premiered at Berlin. So
the one of the segments in this film, this free association but not free association because it's all been meticulously planned,
right?
Except his, you know, his thought processes are kind of his alone. He's narrating, but everything's not being translated into the subtitles. Very much like film socialism. Very much like Goodbye to Language. Like, you don't always get all the translation. Unless you speak French, you're not hearing everything he has to say.
I'm sorry. That's obnoxious.
Well, what has he been his entire career?
Indeed.
Obnoxious.
But
a little
like,
bit obnoxious.
I mean, it's
sometimes
it's,
a lot obnoxious.
It's one thing if you wanted to have no words or dialogue or whatever in the film, but to have it, but then not let non-French speakers in on it.
Look, listen.
Come on, JLG.
Listen, Yank. You took high school French. Figure it out.
Yeah, I'm sure I can follow along with...
one of the segments in the film is called La Région Centrale, which is the name of a 1971 experimental documentary from Michael Snow, Canadian.
Okay.
That's my not-on-DVD pick of the week.
Oh, I see.
It's on YouTube.
Ah.
It's also on bootleg DVD. Like, it's just not really available, but it is...
For new listeners, as a general rule, we never point people to YouTube to see movies when they are accessible in any way on physical media or streaming, because we believe in, you know, paying the artist.
Yeah.
But if no one's going to make this stuff available, then, you know, go see it where you can
find a legit copy, and I looked on the internet, I couldn't find one. If you can find a legit DVD copy of this, please buy it.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It is a strange film. It's 3 hours long. And it's set, he set up a camera, a robotic camera, in the Canadian wilderness, and made the camera go through every sort of motion and angle and, you know, depth of focus and everything that you can do with a robotic camera. And it's just 3 hours of Canadian landscape being shown you in all these different ways.
Do you remember that movie that we saw at Cinematheque once? It was when we went to that 70mm shorts collection. It was called like A Year Around the Lake.
Yeah.
And it was a robotic camera, and it basically took an entire year to go around this one lake, and it was all done in like, what's it called? Not stop motion, but...
Time lapse.
Thank you. And so, in about 10 minutes, you see the entire course of like of all four seasons of one year as this camera goes. It makes one single loop around a lake.
Yeah. So the and I'm blanking on who the filmmaker was on that one. Yeah. For all I know, that was also Michael Snow. I don't
who
know.
Knows?
The anyway, go watch this because it's truly amazing and beautiful. And what are you? What else are you doing with 3 hours of your life?
the picture book is, or sorry, the image book is
short.
Short, yeah.
It's 82 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, Godard's well, one could say his entire career, but certainly his recent stuff has been confounding, but it's never, but I find it still really interesting to watch for the most part. And you know, I like, I feel like I'm accepting the challenge, you know.
Okay, so let's move on to something that people can actually go see in a local multiplex.
Okay.
Why don't you give me a quickie version of Alita Battle Angel, because I have never seen this movie.
Okay.
I cannot get over the face.
Yeah.
The eyes.
Yeah.
It makes me crazy just to look at her. And it looks like a big crashing, thudding nothing.
It kind of is. Right. I thought I was going to get used to the face. I never got used to the face. Mm-hmm. Rosa Salazar stars as Alita, who is found on a scrap heap by a surgeon played by Christoph Waltz. It is the future. There has been some sort of massive event that has led all the rich people to live in giant floating cities above the earth. While everybody else is stuck on the ground.
With Soylent Green.
Well, that's the thing.
Right.
As post-apocalyptic hellscapes go, they have chocolate and oranges. So oh, it's do not they? Like, yes. Oh, all right. So it's not all bad.
Okay.
Sure. Anyway, so he finds Alita. He figures, you know, she must have been discarded from above, because that's what you find on the scrap heap. Takes her back to his lab, gives her a new body, names her after his daughter who died. And she doesn't remember things, and they're trying to figure out what her past was. And obviously, the more time that passes, we realize that she was a, you know, robo soldier, battle angel, whatever. I don't know.
Right.
Meanwhile, there is, she meets this guy, and he's into this sport that's very popular called, motorball, which is like rollerball, but with motorized skates, basically.
Sure.
And people compete in that because the winner will get to go up to the floating city.
And live there?
And live there.
Or do they give you a house?
They don't get into details, but that's why people want to be the champion.
I would need the details.
Of course you would.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Mahershala Ali and Jennifer Connelly are sort of skulking about with nefarious intent. And Jennifer Connelly is Christoph Waltz's ex-wife. And she's got, like, a jewel in her forehead. Mm. And then there's this, like, bad guy in the floating city who can sort of occupy other people's bodies to talk to the people around them. So, like, he'll hop into Mahershala Ali to, like, bark orders at Jennifer Connelly.
Right.
This is apparently based on a manga that James Cameron has been trying to bring to the screen forever.
All right.
And Robert Rodriguez directed it, and it has that feel of there's so much exposition in this movie and so much world building.
Right.
And it's that notion of like, we'll have another three or four movies to really spread out into this and explain everything.
Right.
But just a lot gets thrown at you. The CG is, on the one hand, you know, extraordinary, because you have all these people walking around in these robo bodies, like Ed Skrein. Skrein, I don't know how you say his name.
Skrein.
you know, is basically a face on a robot, you know.
Okay.
But it's all so artificial that just the whole movie becomes just like, there's nothing tangible in it.
Okay.
So, like, I didn't, nothing had weight for me, and nothing felt like actual matter. So I kind of was always at an arm's length from it. And then the eyes on Alita, these big anime eyes on a human being.
Do they
being.
Explain why the eyes are like that?
Nope. No. It just is. And Rosa Wait, Salazar is mocap acting the heck out of this thing. But I would get into her performance, and then at some point I would blink or look away and then look back and go, oh, those eyes, what is going on here? And then all the motorball stuff kind of feels like pod racing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're going to do this for a while.
It borrows everything from everywhere else.
Right. Now, okay. What I'm hearing also is that in it, much like John Carter and Valerian,
okay,
the original source material was borrowed from by a lot of people.
I see.
So if things seem familiar now, it's because other movies got there first and did blah, blah, blah. But I mean, like, I was immediately reminded of Astro Boy. Like, mm-hmm. the whole thing of, like, here's this robot on a junk pile that I'm going to, like, bring back to life. Mm-hmm. That's Astro Boy. And that's back in the 60s, you
Does
know.
She have a machine gun that comes out of her butt?
No, surprisingly.
Well, Astro Boy does.
I know. And you'd think Robert Rodriguez would be all over that. But... So yeah, I there are people who are digging this movie. I saw it with Ricky, and I think he really enjoyed it.
Oh, okay.
And people on Twitter have been nagging at breakfast all day because we weren't enthusiastic enough about it.
Then perhaps this is a film that is simply not for me.
Exactly. So yeah, you know, if you had a great time at Alita: Battle Angel, great, more power to you. I was kind of bored, and I was even seeing it in the theater at the big Dolby house at the AMC where, like, they were exploding things under my butt the whole time. You know, like, just big bass coming through the seats.
Oh, they get you in the sensor round.
Yeah.
Room. Okay.
Yeah. I wish they would do a reissue of The Tingler with that. But, yeah.
Give everybody a little shock.
Exactly. Yeah, I was kind of bored, frankly. And I was certainly not psyched about the prospect of sequels where this was all going to be explained further and made deeper, and when they finally reveal what actor is playing the big bad villain in the last 5 minutes, I kind of laughed out loud. So
okay. Well, you can tell me off the mic.
I will
say it.
So yeah, I mean if you are like a hardcore James Cameron fan or like really big into anime adaptations, I don't know, this might be your thing, but it was not my thing.
Would you like to hold off on fighting with my family until it opens wide?
Sure, we can do that, because I think it's just New York, LA right now. It's going to expand
only
further.
In New York and Los Angeles, and like, well, I don't know if it's just these two cities, but it's only 4 screens this weekend.
Hmm.
It's from Stephen Merchant.
Yes.
He wrote it. He directed it. It's based on a true story about a family in Norwich.
Yes, in the UK.
N-O-R-W-I-C-H, for all you people who live in the United States and think that it is pronounced Norwich.
There's a joke about that in the movie,
it
even.
It is not. And it's where the mustard comes from.
The mustard?
Well, Coleman's comes from Norwich. I don't know if any other mustards come from Norwich.
Oh, okay.
Coleman's mustard comes from Norwich, and there's a little tube of it in the refrigerator.
Oh, that mustard, yes.
Right now, it's really good mustard.
yes, and apparently, like, well, we'll talk about it more next time. But, anyway, but yeah, there was a documentary about this family.
Oh, there was?
Yes.
Oh.
And apparently, like, it's about Paige from the WWE, and according to our friend David Zeev, who follows this stuff, like, her story is fascinating, not just in the origin that we get in this movie, but like her career, how her career ended, like a lot of other stuff about her.
We saw it a few nights ago. I liked it quite a bit.
Me too.
Yeah,
it's very entertaining.
It's very sweet. It's funny.
It's a charming sports movie.
Shaggy. And it's about this family that super loves each other.
Yes.
And I just find that in a world of cinema where no family is happy, this family is legit happy.
It's true. They have problems, but they do love each other.
Mostly they have problems with money.
Yeah.
But they love each other and they're happy.
Yeah. But we'll
talk about it
time.
In depth after you come back from the film festival.
Yes.
That you're going to next week.
Yes.
Yes. There will be no LK recording next weekend.
Yes.
Because Alonso will be away being a jury member at the Jewish Film Festival in Atlanta?
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And but we will talk about that when you get back.
Yes.
Let's talk about Sorry Angel.
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes.
It's a new film from Christophe Honoré.
Yeah.
French director. He made one of my favorite contemporary Christmas movies, Dan Paris, in 2006, I think, 2007. 2008, whatever year it came out.
Mm.
He made the very naughty Ma Mère,
oh,
where Louis Garrel and Isabelle Huppert play a mother and a son who go on adventures together.
Oh my.
Uh-huh. And the he made love songs.
Uh-huh.
And this is his latest one. It's set in 1993. And it is about an almost romance, I guess you could say, between a younger man and an older man.
Yes.
The young guy is like 22,
mm-hmm.
and the older guy is in his 40s. The older guy has AIDS. It is set in 1993, before there was still a good treatment, and before there was the miracle drug of Truvada that prevents HIV that we now have. But the this was at the time of, you know, ACT UP.
Yes.
And very much like BPM from last year.
Mm, yes, totally.
This is a film set in a time when queer life was as radically different from today as you can get.
Yeah.
Like, not only were, and you and I were alive for it, not only were you always afraid that someone was going to give you HIV and you would die within 5 years, but also the methods of communicating between gay men were not what they are now.
Yes. This was pre
pre phones,
pre scruff,
pre apps, pre scruff, yes. So you in this film you see men cruising.
Yes.
In public, like just on the street. And the idea of this sexual culture that gay men built for themselves in the late 1960s and the 1970s and into the 1980s was still in full operation. It's fragmenting now.
Yeah.
And changing quite a bit.
But interestingly, even then you get this impression of like generations of gay men where the youngs are doing it one way, not doing it, but just like living their lives and
one way,
existing and having a culture in one way. And the older ones are like, well, you know, we did blah, 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 blah. And
there's
a
lot of talking about that.
And I was thinking about the fact that the young character in that movie would now be in his late 40s.
Correct.
You know, and
A guy, the young guy in that movie is a guy who was basically our age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that guy would today be confounded about, oh, the kids today and their, you know,
well,
and their lack of labels and whatever else, you know.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating movie. It's at times very moving because I honestly, his films, they're not always great, but I love to be with him and his characters.
Mm.
I love to hear them talk, and they do talk. And this is a feature of Christophe Honoré's films across the board. Talking, 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 talking. And in a way that reminds me almost of Eric Rohmer, but like Eric Rohmer that where everyone is just banging all the time.
Well, and I think
not also having these little clandestine, you know, temptations and romances, but like people are like, oh, would you like to have sex right now on the sidewalk at 2 a.m. when no one's around to watch? Fine, let's do that.
But I think also a Rohmer movie, I think, where people are a lot more direct about their intent.
Yes.
You know, they know themselves a little better, and they aren't maintaining a facade. I mean, the younger character who's played by Vincent Lacoste is still trying to figure himself out. Like, he has a girlfriend, but he like goes out in the middle of the night to bang dudes on the sidewalk.
And she knows everything about everything that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like he basically, like they pick up a hitchhiker and they totally flirt in front of her and she's calling him on it. And he's being like, what are you talking about? No,
why can't you just be chill with that?
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
She's like, I'm breaking up with you.
But yeah, it's again, I think it's really interesting that we've entered this era in which the early years of AIDS are now the stuff of period stories.
Period films,
you know, so you've got like 1985 and BPM.
Well, because the gay male relationship to AIDS and HIV has changed.
Yeah.
Thanks to treatment and preventive medicine that's available.
Yeah.
And so to go back and revisit that time and to remember what happened then is, I think, really valuable. Especially you queer filmmakers doing this is also, I think, very important.
Oh, totally. Because yeah. I think, again, part of the aspect of the youth culture today is that they don't know a lot of this stuff.
Right.
And part of why they don't know it is because a lot of the people who would be here to tell them about it died.
Right.
You know, I will never forget at Outfest, we did a screening of the documentary We Were Here, David Weissman's beautiful film about caregivers in San Francisco who took care of HIV patients and terminal AIDS patients. And this kid got up during the Q&A and he goes, I'm 21 and I didn't know any of this.
Right.
You know, and so this is a thing I complain about all the time with, you know, the culture in general, and that, like, you know, I was a weirdo and I grew up knowing about like 1950s television and 1930s movies, even though I was, you know, a child of the 70s and 80s. But, you know, for the most part, I think people in this country particularly aren't compelled to learn about history and aren't compelled to learn about anything that happened before they were born. And so, yeah, I agree with you. These movies, I think, serve a real purpose. And I think this is just a really, it's a beautiful drama. It's the relationship between these two characters is fascinating to watch, and the attitudes they bring, and one of them understanding that his time is limited and the other one who's like just getting started and thinks he's going to live forever. Right. And, you know, I don't know how widely released this movie is going to be.
It opened this weekend at the New Art in Los Angeles. Yes. So it's playing here on one screen in Los Angeles. Strand has it. Yeah. I assume they'll try to push it out into other cities.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for Sorry Angel. It's a really lovely movie.
Yeah. You saw Isn't It Romantic?
Yeah.
I have not yet seen it, but you came home with enough of a positive feeling about it that I will be going to watch it this week.
Yeah, it's not perfect, and it's not what it could have been.
I didn't want to see it. I was waiting for you to come home and tell me.
Yes, I was your poison taster on that one. It doesn't go as far as it could have, but where it does go is still fairly entertaining. Rebel Wilson plays a woman who works at an architecture firm in New York, is mostly ignored by her colleagues and doesn't really stand up for herself or her own work. She has a lengthy conversation with a coworker played by Betty Gilpin about how romantic comedies are stupid and she hates them, and here's all the reasons why she hates them.
Right.
And then that night she gets mugged in the subway and bonked on the head because, you know, we're in the golden age of lady bonked on the head cinema.
Yes.
On the heels of What Men Want and I Feel Pretty. And when she wakes up, she is in a romantic comedy. It's not unlike when the movie Delirious, where John Candy plays a soaps writer who gets bonked on the head and wakes up in a soap opera.
Right.
Except she's not writing it. She's sort of subject to the rules of it. And so, you know, the cinematography changes. It's almost like The Wizard of Oz, you know, where it goes from sepia to color. The early sequences in the architectural firm are all kind of like fluorescently lit, and New York is sort of dingy. She lives on this street in, like, I can't remember now which neighborhood she's in, but it's kind of, you know, ratty and, you know, unkempt. But in the romantic comedy version, every store is flowers or cupcakes, you know, and New York just has this like golden sheen, and everyone walks in pairs, and, you know, the lake in Central Park is covered with rowboats of people smooching, and, you know, just it's ridiculously just, you know, her apartment is suddenly much larger with a huge walk-in closet full of shoes, you know.
All right.
So it's, you know, it's goofy. It could be more.
But is it her real life, or is that a spoiler that I shouldn't ask about?
Is what her real life?
Is the romantic comedy world her real life?
No. It's obviously she has woken up in this other thing and she has to figure out how to get out of it.
I see.
But, you know, it is the romantic comedy version of her real life, like, so, which is everything from the apartment being bigger and her dog suddenly, like, being cleaner and responding to, you know, trick commands, to Betty Gilpin suddenly becoming her nemesis. Because one of the things that they complained about at the beginning of the movie is, like, yeah, there's two women in the office and they have to be rivals because, God forbid, women in business be friends, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. It's more fun as a movie that makes fun of movie tropes than it is necessarily about a character piece, because, of course, you know, like, The Rebel Wilson character has to learn to love herself,
of course,
and all that, you know, blah blah blah. But you know, it goes down easy. It's like 80 minutes. It's in and out. You know,
really?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Oh,
it's between 80 and 90. But like, it doesn't.
My favorite film length.
It doesn't overplay the joke.
After recommending a 3-hour experimental documentary.
Exactly. Yeah. What are you talking about? So yeah, it's fun. It's fun. You know, it is slight but fun.
Like me. Slight, but fun.
You are many things, but slight is not one of them.
Slight. Okay. Happy Death Day to you.
Ooh.
Is so rad.
Oh my gosh. I had the best time.
So, if you have not seen Happy Death Day, you should.
Yeah, you have to watch it first.
Now, in this sequel, they provide you with literally
a previously on
Happy Death Day like montage where someone in the film doesn't know what happened to Tree, that's right, played by Jessica Roth, who is a star.
Like, yeah.
Between that film and this film, I am rooting for her career, but more on that later.
Yeah.
She sits someone down in this movie and goes, okay, recap. Here's what just happened to me. And you go through like clips from the first film. But even though they give you a recap,
there are little references and shout outs along the way that will only
really make sense to you if you've seen the first one. So yeah. Do see the first one,
which is also fun.
Now, the first one is a horror film.
Yeah,
straight up horror film.
It's a Groundhog Day slasher,
where she has to relive the same day over and over again and get killed by the same masked serial killer.
Yeah, until she figures out who it is and how to stop it.
Until she figures out how to stop her own death from happening.
And in the process, discovers that she's a terrible person.
Right.
Which, much like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day.
It's very, very much like sort of against the usual final girl scenario. Usually, everyone else around the final girl is the bad person. Yeah. And they get killed for their crimes of being bad people. She is the bad person. And you find out why. Like, she got reasons.
Yeah.
You know. But she has to learn that not only is she terrible, but she has to start fixing her life. This one, she finds out that through the help of physics students on campus at her college, that there are multiple dimensions, there are multiple universes, all of them containing her and them, but all of them slightly different, where a variety of outcomes can take place.
Right.
And she has to navigate her way through those.
Yeah.
But it stops being about the slasher with the baby mask on.
Right.
And starts being about, how do we get back to the reality we want to get back to?
Yeah. So it does become this weirdly sort of sci-fi thing now, where of with parallel dimensions and whatnot. And part of the challenge of this dimension that she winds up in is that not only is she being killed over and over again, but in this other dimension, the guy who becomes her boyfriend in the first movie is the boyfriend of her like frenemy.
Yeah.
And her mother is not dead.
In the first film, she's grieving the loss of her mother, which has turned her into a bad person.
Right. And
but
so
in
this
the other
time,
dimension here, her mother's alive.
So she has to figure out, do I stay or do I go?
Right.
And as Bibbs pointed out in his review at The Wrap, like, this is the rare sequel where they don't undo all the growth and learning that the character does in the first movie.
Right.
Like, it is Tree 2.0 who's at play here, and that becomes important for the decision she makes and how she gets through this situation.
What I love about this is, first of all, it's a wildly entertaining film on its own. There is, first of all, one of the best lines of dialogue I've heard in 2019 so far. I know we're only in February. But when the nemesis, the frenemy, says, no one wants to pledge Kappa anymore now that we've got a death curse. There's a math montage.
Yes. If you're a fan of Real Genius, this will push some buttons for you.
There's a... How do I say this without making light of this very serious thing? There's a suicide montage.
Well, again, it's like Groundhog Day.
In order to keep the ball rolling so that she can solve it, she has to take her own death into her own hands.
Yes.
She's like, because the physics people were like, do you want to get chased and stabbed by a stranger every day, or do you just want to do it yourself? So she starts doing it all these different ways, like jumping out of an airplane with no parachute, you know, stuff like that.
Wildly elaborate things.
Very elaborate and all very comedic.
It's a, you know, so Jessica Roth is back. Israel Broussard is her boyfriend. Faivu, who was the roommate in the first movie, who is just kind of an ancillary character, becomes central this time.
Central this time.
Because the device, the Sisyphus device,
yes.
becomes very key here. And Suraj Sharma, as one of the other science guys, I was like, where did I know that guy? He was Pi.
Oh.
From The Life of Pi.
I wondered where I'd seen his face.
And he was on Homeland.
Because he looked so familiar. Yeah. And I thought, I know you somehow.
I'm like, why is this guy not working more? He's so great.
Yeah, he is good. Here's what I love about this as a sequel. They don't just rehash a thing.
No.
They don't just do the same movie again. Somebody at Blumhouse said, no, be weirder.
Yeah.
Go be weirder. Go deeper into these characters, into the craziness of this situation, and just get weirder.
Christopher Landon directed the first time out, and this time he writes and directs. And
it's silly, and it's funny, and it's smart. And again, Jessica Roth.
Yeah. It's so appealing.
Horror films, genre films like this, don't often take a lot of care when it comes to casting. They want a look, they want a vibe, but they don't necessarily ask you to be an actor.
I don't know. I mean, conversely, I would say that horror films often provide women with the opportunity to play... To play characters that are more active and more...
Yes.
You know.
But not as emotionally real.
This is true.
As she is here.
Yeah.
Like, she's really... Like,
this
she's
movie has some
you performance in this film.
There was a moment here where I was like, oh my God, I might cry. Like,
no, there is a sequence in this film that's very moving. Of course it involves the mom.
But I was stunned, A, that they went there, and B, that they made it work.
Right.
You know, this is not the kind of thing you usually get from a horror film. But again, this really isn't a horror film as much.
It's not a horror.
It is veering more into the sci-fi comedy.
It's not a horror film anymore.
But there are still character stakes.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. and I want you guys to watch it.
Yeah. It's not as high on the tomato meter as the first one.
I don't know what that's about.
It's not. I don't know that it's opening that well. But yeah, go see this movie. It's really inventive and clever. Is this a new thing with Valentine's Day becoming like, you know, July 4th and Christmas, where things open on it? Like,
I don't know.
In the last couple of years, suddenly it's become this thing. Because this year, all the big, you know, Isn't It Romantic and Fighting With My Family and this all opened on Thursday. I guess it's a big date night.
Like, people go to the movies on Valentine's Day, I guess.
Apparently.
Maybe they do. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought they just went to dinner and, you know, made it impossible to get a reservation anywhere.
Right. Not if you go to Arby's like the time we did that.
That's right. That's our Valentine destination.
Don't need no reservation to go do up Valentine's Day at Arby's.
No, they hold a table for me.
You're a VIP there. What is your DVD pick?
Well, I was going to do something that was Stephen Merchant related, but now that we have pushed back our discussion.
Anyway.
No, I'll save it for next week. 1985.
Which I think you've already recommended before, but go on and do it.
Yeah, well, you know, it didn't get the big theatrical push that I think it deserved. It was on my top 25 list. I hope people go check it out. It is from writer-director Yen Tan, who is a great indie filmmaker and a great poster designer, by the way, for himself and other people. It stars Corey Michael Smith, who you may know from Gotham or from Todd Haynes' Carol, as a guy who's been living in New York who comes back to Texas for one last Christmas in 1985. He is gay. He is dying. His parents know neither of these things, and they are played by Virginia Madsen and Michael Chiklis. It is shot in gorgeous black and white. It is a haunting film about, again, this period we've been talking about, the where you know there was no real treatment for AIDS, and it was basically considered a death sentence for people. And it is just this great film about family and mortality. And you know, he has this, there's a really interesting relationship that he has with his younger brother, and his own past that he's revisiting. So yeah, I've probably made it a recommendation before, but I'm recommending it again. People need to stream or buy or whatever. 1985. What about you? Oh, you did the 3 hour Michael Snow nature documentary, yes. La Région Centrale, right?
Thank you for saying it right, because I can't say it right.
Yeah.
So I have no French ability at all.
Thank you, high school French.
And we don't have letters.
No, because we're kind of rushed. We're
rushing through the show today. We have three of these to deal with today. I have two.
I have three. Yeah.
I'm going. While you're off at the Max Fun, I'm going to actually. A double feature.
Ooh, that's so rare for you.
Never do.
You bring in a pillow?
No, but I have already told my viewing companion that I will probably be up and down in the seats because it's at Downtown Independent.
Can you pre-book the sofas there, or is it first come, first served?
There are no sofas there.
Really? There used to be.
What are you talking about?
There used to be at Downtown Independent.
Really?
Yeah. They used to have like two sofas right in the middle on like certain rows.
Oh, well, perhaps you know what? Maybe they still have them. I just don't know what they are. I've never noticed them.
Okay.
If they exist, I've never seen them.
But you were so willing to put me on blast.
That's not what put on blast means.
You were
just
so willing.
FYI.
You were so willing, Grandpa, to try and make me look stupid in front of company.
Okay, sure, yes. That's always a pleasure.
Uh-huh, yes, well.
There's a double feature today of two Chai Ming Lang films. His newest one, which is called Your Face.
Mm-hmm.
And it is pretty short. I think it's like 75 minutes.
So's Your Face.
It's silent. Exactly. It's a series of shots of people's faces.
Okay.
And apparently there's no dialogue. Which, you know, for Chai Ming Lang, no dialogue versus having dialogue
is a fine line.
Is a fine line, yeah, because there's not, even when there are actors with, you know, lines to say in his films, you might wait 20 minutes for someone to say something. So
I should show you the Bill Plimpton cartoon, Your Face, if you've never seen it.
I haven't.
Oh, goodness. Okay, yeah. I will.
And then they're also showing a 2009 film that I haven't seen yet, that I'm very excited to see, called Visage.
Faces.
Yes. Starring all these French actors.
Yeah.
Fanny Ardant and Matthew Amalric and all these folks. When his normal cast of actors go to France to make a movie, and they encounter all these French actors who I assume are playing themselves. I don't know, but it's one of the few of his films that I haven't seen yet, and so I'm
well. You can report back next week.
I'm very, very excited about this, but man, double features. I can't sit for very long in theater seats anymore. It just hurts my legs. I'm 100 now, and my legs are falling off my body, and they're falling apart. And so, sitting down for a long time, I have to get up and walk around. So, I'll probably sit down for a while, go off, stand in the aisle, off to the side, and
maybe,
come back.
Maybe
sit down.
We need to get you some compression hosiery or something.
Yes. Maybe that needs to happen. Compression hosiery. Won't I feel great?
Be very stimulating.
In compression hosiery. No, You know what the deal is? I've been a film critic for 20 years. My butt is worn out from seats. They don't like my chairs are killing me. I don't like chairs anymore.
I see.
Yeah, that's basically it.
All right. Standing desk for you then.
Yeah.
Anyway. So just a quick reminder to everybody again.
No show next week.
Yes, I will be out of town, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com and listen to Bibbs and Whitney's podcasts, Canceled Too Soon and critically acclaimed over at the Schmoes Know Network. And check out the Schmoes Know, of course, as well as Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the comics canon, all things cozy, Sewers of Paris, Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. It does help people find the show, and it makes us feel better. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio and Spotify and thelounge.com and Google Play and yada, yada, yada. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with any questions or comments. Maybe we'll do an all-letter episode soon and get caught up.
We're going to have to catch up on actual movies first.
That's true. But, yeah. You know, in the spring.
We'll keep promising these all-letter episodes, and I've just got to the point where I think to myself, we get so many letters, yeah. We can't possibly answer all of them anymore.
That is also...
This isn't like 7 years ago when we were like getting 4 letters a week and we could usually get up to most of them or catch up with them in a one-off letters episode. We hear too much from too many people now. We can't get to all of them anymore.
You're right.
It is a sad fact.
You're right.
We're so popular.
Yeah, not so much. Anyway, thank you, Blue, as always, for our theme music. Go check his stuff out at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with movies and, some half-hearted post-Oscar punditry. And
why not full-hearted? Why not whole-hearted?
Why not half-hearted? All the Oscars get.
I'll probably watch them. I like them.
The one thing I'm looking forward to about the Oscars this year is because I'll be in Atlanta.
I'll
be watching it with my friend Kurt Holman for the first time in like 30 years. So that's going to be exciting. Kurt, by the way, co-host of the Comics Canon. Go check out that podcast if you have not already. All right. It's been lovely. We'll catch you guys next time. So until then.
Goodbye.